जय, अनंत कोटि वैष्णव की जय, नमचार्य श्रील हरिदास ठाकुर की जय, प्रेम से गो श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य गुरु नित्यानंद श्री गुरु राधा शिवा श्री गौर भक्तवृंद की जय, श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गोप गोपीनाथ श्याम कुंड राधा कुंड की जय, वृंदावन धाम की जय, नवद्वीप धाम की जय, गंगमय की जय, तुलसी देवी की जय, भक्ति देवी की जय, समवेद भक्त की जय, श्री नृसिंह भगवान की जय, श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय, जय गौर प्रेमानंद। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 2, Verse 9. Translation. This is Hiranyakashipu speaking to his mother and his brother's sister and the other family members and the demons. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has given up his natural tendency of equality toward the demons and demigods. Although he is the Supreme Person, now, influenced by Maya, he has assumed the form of a boar to please his devotees, the demigods. Just as a restless child leans towards someone, I shall therefore sever Lord Vishnu's head from his trunk by my trident, and with the profuse blood from his body I shall please my brother Hiranyaksha, who is so fond of sucking blood. Thus shall I too become peaceful. Good word by his divine grace. The defect of the demoniac mentality is expressed in this verse very clearly. Hiranyakashipu thought that Vishnu also becomes partial, like a child whose mind is not steady or resolute. The Lord can change his mind at any time, Hiranyakashipu thought. Therefore, his words and activities are like those of children. Actually, because the demons are ordinary human beings, their minds change. And being materially conditioned, they think that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is conditioned also. As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 9:11, Avjanati mam buddha manushyantam ashram. Fools deride me when I descend in a human form. Hiranyakashipu accused the Supreme Lord of having a restless mind like that of a small child who could be induced to do anything if simply offered some cakes and laddus. Listen to this purport. This is wonderful. Indirectly, this indicates the true position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who says in Bhagavad Gita, Patram Pushpa Palam Dayam Yoga Bhakti Pratchit. The highest quality of the Supreme Lord is that he is Bhakta Vatsala. In other words, he is always extremely pleased with his devotees. As for the word Maya, when used in reference to the dealings of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his devotees, this word means affection. The actions of the Lord to favor his devotees are not disqualifications, but are rather signs of his natural affection. As for Rudira, or the blood of Lord Vishnu, since there is no possibility of serving or severing Lord Vishnu's head from his body, there is no question of blood. But the garland that decorates Lord Vishnu's body is red. When the demons achieve Sayujya Mukti and leave behind their sinful activities, they are blessed by Lord Vishnu's garland, which is red. After attaining Sayujya Mukti, the demons are sometimes promoted to the Vaikunthas, where they receive the reward of the Lord's garland prasad. Om Nityanandasya Gananjana Sri Kaya Chakshuru Vitamina Tasvashi. This is a very interesting chapter where Hiranyakashipu is preaching to his mother, Diti, and his brother's wife, and the other relatives, as well as the son of demons. And up until this verse, Hiranyakashipu is eloquently, systematically, scientifically describing the science of the soul and its relationship to the material world as being temporary. The soul is eternal, but the material world is temporary. And because we identify with this material world, we develop affection and friendship, but it's all temporary, doomed to end, and therefore we should not lament when it's finished. And Srila Prabhupada is actually taking great delight in expanding and elaborating upon the very accurate verses of Hiranyakashipu describing the nature of the soul in this world. In this verse, Hiranyakashipu is revealing the improper motive and wrong conclusion which follows his eloquent presentation. Because here, he's saying that Vishnu is in Maya. Because he's given up his partiality. He's favored the demigods. He's turned against the demons. And thus, like a little child who can easily be swayed by offering him ladus, the Lord's mind has been affected due to affection to his devotees. Now here Srila Prabhupada is also delighting in expanding upon the words of Hiranyakashipu. But he's not saying he's right in this verse. Up until this point, when he's describing the relationship between the eternal soul in the temporary material world, he's been precisely accurate. From which you can see that although a demon, he's very learned in Vedic philosophy. And we know he's very accomplished in tapasya. And he's charitable and religious. But here he's indicating the fallacy in his conclusion and the defect in his motivation, because he's envious. So he's saying that, and he's saying this with motive. He wants, on the one hand, to appease his family members who are so aggrieved at the death of Hiranyaksha. And they were. They became completely peaceful at heart by hearing his eloquent instructions about how the soul should be detached from this temporary material world in which everything is doomed to end. And they were pacified to hear his preaching. But here, the fallacy in his conclusion and the motivation which leads him to the wrong conclusion is being revealed. Vishnu is in Maya. Therefore, the demons have to take charge of the Universal Administration. And practically Hiranyakashipu did that. He had all the great demigods and rishis, with the exception of Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, serving him. He was controlling the modes of material nature. He could make the sun rise and shine anytime he wanted, just by his command. And this is the defect in the Mayavad. Although Mayavadis may be very eloquent in their preaching, very learned in their understanding, their conclusion is just the opposite of the Vaishnavas. The Vaishnavas' conclusion is that we should surrender to Krishna and serve him eternally. The demons' conclusion is that we should become Krishna and be served eternally. So, desiring to incite the demons to retaliate the death of his brother, Hiranyakashipu continues to preach. He's actually preaching Bhagavad Gita. He's saying that since Lord Vishnu, actually it's just the next verse, when the root of a tree is cut and the tree falls down, its branches and twigs automatically dry up. Similarly, when I have killed this diplomatic Vishnu, the demigods for whom Lord Vishnu is the life and soul will lose the source of their life and wither away. So this is his paraphrase of Aham Sarvasya Brahmavam Matasavam Vavartate Iti Matravatati Mahamura Bhavasamandaka. He's saying that Lord Vishnu is the root of the tree of life. And by severing that root, the demigods will lose their life and wither away. So, Vedic wisdom, including Bhagavad Gita, is also understood and quoted by demons. And you can see in the history of this world, Adolf Hitler was very fond of Vedic wisdom. Vedic insignias and his interpretation of Vedic sacrifice. But it had a hideous effect. Because knowledge is power. And knowledge properly used can change the hearts of conditioned souls and inspire them to surrender to Krishna. Whereas that same knowledge, Vedic knowledge, when twisted due to motive to propound the wrong conclusion, is so deadly that Mahaprabhu has warned that even a Paramahamsa, even residents of the spiritual sky, if they hear with submissive oral reception the Mayavad Siddhanta, they will fall down. So, Vedic culture is based on watering the roots of the tree of life by serving Krishna, by pleasing Krishna. All of the leaves, twigs, flowers, and branches of the tree, meaning all the living entities in creation, are naturally satisfied. Conversely, severing that root destroys everything and everyone. And what is the difference in motive? The devotees want to please Krishna. The demons, because of envy, want to control, exploit, and enjoy based on this misconception. And Vishnu is in Maya. He's not competent. But interestingly enough, Hiranyaksha is perfect, as is Hiranyakashipu, in his own opinion. So, how is this Mayavada conclusion so powerful that it can make a Paramahamsa fall? Because it kills our bhakti. So even though Hiranyakashipu is describing the nature of the soul and the world so accurately, he's come to the wrong conclusion. But Srila Prabhupada, as is, we have many cases where Saraswati would reinterpret words of someone who is either blaspheming the Lord, as Shishupal did, and Saraswati can reinterpret those words to actually glorify the Lord. Or that Bengali poet who really wanted to praise Lord Jagannath, but due to some not understanding the Siddhanta, he incorporated some rasa vasa, which displeased Mahaprabhu, but Sri Damodar made some adjustments and said, it's actually praising Lord Jagannath. So, but it's important to understand what is the motive of demons in using philosophy and science while simultaneously undermining faith in Vedic culture, the cows and the Brahmins. The British understood very clearly that they could not conquer India if they did not first undermine the people's natural inherent faith in the cows, the Brahmins, and Vedic culture. And therefore they dispatched their team of Indologists to translate the Vedic scriptures on the pretext that it would help people of other lands understand the Indian people. And their translations appeared, and maybe some actually were in some cases quite accurate, but due to a twisted motive, they were presented with a slight twist that made the scriptures appear to be backwards, barbaric, and inferior. Intentional. Because if someone wants to destroy your faith, they won't come out and say there's no God, because nobody will believe that. The demons undermine our faith by presenting the scriptures in such a way as, or even the science in such a way, as you are led to question what is the role, the purpose, and the need of God according to this scientific presentation. And even religious people, in most cases, they don't really have strong, deep, implicit faith. What is the motive of the demons in attacking or undermining people's faith? Because if people have faith, if they have strong faith, you cannot control them. You cannot conquer them, dominate, or exploit. Undermine people's faith, and then you can control them through media and other means. Control to exploit. And as far as devotees are concerned, our acharyas put so much emphasis on submissive hearing from a proper source. As we have in the case of Krishna's Vrindavan Lila, specifically Rasa. If you hear from the proper source, it will diminish the fire of lust because of the love that is conveyed in a proper presentation of that pastime. If you hear from the improper source, fire of lust simply increases. And for devotees, the most important thing is the proper conception we receive in hearing the scriptures presented. Because the Mayavadis, as we see here, in the case of Hiranyakashipu, he's a Mayavadi because he's saying Vishnu is a Maya. It's a form of Mayavada. His conclusion is that Krishna is a Maya, which is the same conclusion as most Mayavadis, that, you know, I'm Krishna, you're Krishna, we're all Krishna. But we became illusion. As Krishna, we fell into Maya and identified with this material body and temporary material world. So we just have to recondition ourselves to remember that we're God. But all that Vedic wisdom that leads to that conclusion is rendered useless because the conclusion is that this world is therefore for our enjoyment, to exploit, control, and dominate. Whereas the same knowledge which Hiranyakashipu has been elaborately expounding in this chapter, presented by the Vaishnavas, leads to the conclusion that this world is meant for Krishna's pleasure and Krishna's service. And with that basic siddhanta, everything in this world reiterates and substantiates and illuminates these Shastric conclusions. So we have to see through the eyes of Scripture and hear submissively and be trained by the proper personality who is surrendered to Guru Parampara. Srila Prabhupada emphasized that Krishna doesn't look at what we offer, but he looks upon the mood in which we make the offering. And therefore he's so fond of quoting as he does here. And we see in Krishna's own lila, when Duryodhana prepared that royal feast to which he invited Krishna, Krishna didn't go. He wasn't the least bit attracted because he knew Duryodhana was motivated in a selfish way. He was very happy to go to Uruva's house. And what kind of royal reception did he receive at Uruva's house? I mean, there was different times, but the one time Uruva wasn't home, his wife was there, and so enraptured that Krishna's at the door, she began peeling bananas and offering him the peel and throwing the banana away. And she just keeps handing Krishna banana peels and he's eating with such relish until she finally realizes, what are you doing? You're eating the peels? And he said, it's not what you offer me that makes it sumptuous. It's the love in which you make the offer. Or in Chaitanya Lila, Mahaprabhu is in South India in the Sri Ranga, which is a place where the South Indian pundits, who are very exalted in their grasp of Vedic wisdom, they would congregate to discuss Vedanta. And there, Lord Chaitanya singled out one really humble Brahmana who was trying to recite Bhagavad Gita, but was mispronouncing so many of the words, he couldn't even read the verses. And people were laughing at him and making fun of him. Mahaprabhu was attracted to him. And he inquired submissively from this Brahmana, what is it about Bhagavad Gita that is giving you so much pleasure and so much ecstasy? And the Brahmana told his story. I can't understand what I'm reading. I'm reading this text daily because it is my Gurudev's instruction. But I don't know Sanskrit. I can't understand it. And I don't even know if I'm pronouncing it properly. I don't know who asked, but what is causing you so much ecstasy if you don't even know what you're reading? And he said, I'm just seeing Shyamasundara. He's taking the reins of the chariot to serve his servant. Shyamasundara is teaching Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. And I'm just so moved to see Shyamasundara's exalted quality is Bhaktivatsa. He's the friend of his devotee. So this Brahman had the ability to see through and to enter beyond the curtain of Maya, which Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita. I never manifested the foolish and unintelligent. To them, I'm covered by this curtain of Yoga Maya. This Brahman had seen through and entered beyond the curtain and was seeing Shyamasundara instructing Arjuna and Bhagavad Gita. And Srila Prabhupada is emphasizing in this purport of Srimad Bhagavatam that this is Krishna's primary opulence, Bhaktivatsa. And this is also a very primary quality of Lord Nrsingadev. And Srila Prabhupada loved to comment and narrate the teachings of Prahlad and the pastimes of Lord Nrsinga. Anyway, the Brahman, Sri Ranga, he was filled with such joy that he was not the least bit disturbed by the criticism and the humiliation. And Srila Prabhupada commented about himself that he had godbrothers who was so much more highly educated than himself. Much more scholarly. But whose preaching and whose rendition of Bhagavad Gita changed the lives and transformed the hearts of souls in this world worldwide? Srila Prabhupada was empowered because of his humility and his devotion. He was seeing Krishna, and he was awarded that vision to those who followed him and heard from him with submissive oral reception. And I can't remember which book it is, but in the appreciation of scholars regarding Srila Prabhupada's books, there was one scholar who said that Srila Prabhupada's words are so powerful because it is the voice of a whole tradition coming through him. That's parampara. When Hayagriva Prabhu had that dream, which he told Srila Prabhupada, had a dream. Krishna was instructing Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and then it shifted, and you were teaching me Bhagavad Gita. And Srila Prabhupada said, this is parampara. Hearing submissively from your Gurudev, you're hearing the whole parampara presenting the original exposition on the battlefield. So it's not learning or tapasya or sacrifice that brings us closer to Krishna and awards an understanding of Krishna. When that tapasya in Nadia, who so much wanted to see Lord Garuda dancing, and he kept asking Srivast Thakur, who was very uneasy about giving his consent after the episode with his mother-in-law. But he was thinking, his tapasya, he's so pure. He lives on milk, and at most, he might eat a little fruit sometimes. Very humble, very submissive. But he kept telling, I don't have Mahaprabhu's permission to allow you in to the kirtan. So finally, he gave him consent with his hide. And then Mahaprabhu, as usual, with such net, I'm not feeling any ecstasy. And when we found the tapasya hiding, and get him out. You think that simply by tapasya you can see me? And he ran away. He was so humble that Mahaprabhu said, come back. He brought him back. He invited him into the kirtan. But then he gave him some instructions, worthy instructions for all of us. You think by your own abilities you can see the Lord's pastimes? What was the qualification of Gajendra? He was an elephant. Of Hanuman, a monkey. Of the gopis, cowherd girls, living in the forest. It was their humility, their devotion. So Srila Prabhupada comments that Bhaktivatsala is one of the wonderful, unique, not unique, but exemplary qualities of Lord Nrisimha. And the Acharyas emphasize worship of Lord Nrisimhadeva to remove obstacles on the path of devotional service. Prahlad Maharaj leads the residents of Jambudvip in prayer in the fifth canto. Oh, Lord, who possesses nails and teeth like thunderbolts, please vanquish these demon-like desires that are living within our hearts. May there be all good fortune throughout the universe, and may all envious living entities be pacified. May we all engage in devotional service, because only then can we really think of each other's welfare. May we all engage in service to the Supreme Transcendence, Lord Sri Krishna, and ever remain absorbed in loving thoughts of Him. So, we worship Lord Nrisimhadeva to remove those obstacles, to kill those demons, these subtle anarthas in our hearts, as prerequisite to worship of when he died, not of Krishna. Hiranyakashipu is a personification of material desire. And his encounter with Lord Nrisimhadeva is described in different ways, in different Puranas. Because every day of Brahma ends in a partial apocalypse, which starts creation of a new slate. And the pastimes repeat, but they're not identical. They're the same patterns, the same lessons, but lots of variegatedness in the details. One time, or sometimes, Hiranyakashipu worships Lord Shiva. And when Mahadev appears, he asks for pretty much the same kind of benediction and makes the same fateful omission, seeing it below his dignity to ask for protection from men, or man, or the Lord. So, serving him, and he was controlling everything and everyone except Prahlad. And he kept to Prahlad, why don't you worship me? Why can't I control you? What is the source of your power? My dear father, my power is the same source of everyone's power. It's Krishna. Krishna. I said, because you do not worship me, this is such an offense. And then he called his demons to kill him. So they began, piercing him with their different weapons and tridents and swords and lances. And whenever they struck Prahlada with any weapon, it just transmuted into a blue lotus. Until he was Pushpanjali. He was just covered with lotus flowers. And then Hiranyakashipu summoned his mad bull elephants in Must. Now, when a bull elephant is in Must, his mahout can't even control them. They are just so mad because of the overload of testosterone in there. And when those bull elephants attacked Prahlad and they struck him with their tusks fell off. Now, for a regular bull, his horns are from bull elephant, his tusk is part of his male ego. When the tusks fell off, he just ran away screaming, totally humiliated. And then he gave him poison, condensed poison, the type terrorists would use to wipe out cities. And he offered it to Krishna, became nectar. Put him in the fire, and became cool. Another day of Brahma, when Hiranyakashipu he built this huge stadium. It's about half the size of the United States. And it was solely for the worship of Hiranyakashipu. And all his citizens would come in, and it was a very celestial, enjoyable atmosphere with Gandharvas singing and Apsaras dancing and a whole symphony orchestra with choir singing the glories of Hiranyakashipu. But he was, as usual, he was so disturbed with Prahlad. He was always very respectful and loving toward his father, but he was so disturbed that you won't surrender. I give you till nightfall, till dusk to surrender, or I will kill you. So at dusk, he started striking with a sword. But his sword just went right through Prahlad because he has a spiritual body. The soul can't be severed by weapons or burned by fire or drowned. So the sword just went right through him. Where did you get your power? It was the same thing. So then, and Lord Rishinga, when the demigods were praying to him, he would get involved. But he said, when he assaults Prahlad, I will put an end to him. So Lord Nrsimhadev came flying into that city just outside that stadium. He was flying around this huge golden form. Everybody's like, I don't know why people watch these videos and all these stupid things when you look at Srimad Bhagavatam. There's no comparison. So Lord Nrsimhadev was flying. And then he flew in the back door of the stadium. And Hiranyakashipu said, what is that beast? Tell him to get out of here. So he told him, you have to leave. He said, no. So then Hiranyakashipu, he called his air force. He had a very sophisticated air force. And all his airplanes came in attacking Lord Nrsimhadev. But he was just shaking his mane. And when the hairs of his mane struck those airplanes, it's like, it's a gross example, but some people have these, I don't know what they zappers, I think they call them. They zap the bugs. So it was like zapping all these airplanes and they were crashing down to the ground. And then he had a whole arsenal of missiles with nuclear warheads and Brahmastras and all different types. And he fired all the missiles and Lord Nrsimhadev, he just catched them and bite off the warheads and throw them back and then off. And finally he didn't have any weapons left. So he attacked Lord Nrsimhadev with a sword. And they rose up into the air and they were dancing in the air until the Lord had enough and just killed him. And then he was very fierce. He could not be approached by the devas. This time Lakshmi was able to approach him, but the demigods couldn't come forward because his effulgence was so burning. And they kept praying to Lakshmi, can you inspire him to reduce the heat of that effulgence so we can come forward and offer our prayers? So she whispered something to Lord Shikadeva, and the effulgence became cooling. And the demigods came and offered their prayers. And then, after killing Hiranyakashipu, and he was so ferocious and so fierce and could not be approached in this day of Brahma, he went to Navadvipa Dham to wash his hands of the blood and purify himself from that in the Ganges water. And when he washed his hands and took rest in Navadvipa Dham, all the demigods were able to approach him and serve him and cook for him and worship him. Because the influence of Mayapur, the abode of mercy, the atmosphere had such an effect that Navadvipa became very peaceful. And when the first full 9-day parikrama party went there, the residents were so simple. This is way out. And I couldn't understand why we have to go answer the call of nature. These villagers insist on following you. And I said, well, you know, what's wrong with these people? And they said, they think Americans are demigods. Just like the ones who, you know, these hills are the broken residences of the demigods from, you know, the Satya Yuga. So we think that you're demigods, and they don't understand you have to answer the call of nature. So, and in recent history, Shankaranand Prabhu was telling about all these religious fanatics in the Muslim tradition in the past, but you know, since the time of Mahaprabhu, some of them actually became favorable, like Akbar, who would inquire from his Hindu minister, Birbal, you know, our Islamic religion is very exalted, and our Allah, he does not condescend to serve humans. So what kind of Lord is this Nrsingadev who comes down to serve this little child? I can't understand what kind of theology would make the Supreme Lord, who in our religion is very aloof, you know, come running down to save this child. Can you explain this to me? I said, tomorrow. And then Birbal went and talked to the caretaker of Akbar's grandson, and he bribed him to assist him in imparting this lesson. So the next day when Akbar came out on his balcony overlooking his vast pleasure gardens, which had a beautiful pond, watching as his grandson's caretaker was holding the child in his arms as he strolled peacefully through the garden and around the lake. And then he took the child and threw him in the lake. And Akbar jumped down off the balcony and he running and running and running and jumped in the lake and rescued the child and brought him to shore. There's a puppet. A full-sized, lifelike puppet. Now what is going on? And then Birbal approached him and said, what kind of emperor would jump off his balcony and descend to the garden and run and jump in the pond to save a puppet? Doesn't he have ministers and servants that could do that for him? This is the greatness of Lord Nrsingadev. It's his love for his devotees, the loving relationships, the familial affection that he is bhakti vatsala. And his servants also have that love. That after his father was killed, Prahlad prayed to Lord Vishnu and please forgive him. He made so many mistakes, but please forgive him. And Lord Vishnu said, because you have taken birth in his family, 14 generations of Abraham. So this is the Lord we worship. And what's the best way to please him and attract him? Call him by name. And he will offer the everlasting shelter of his love. Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments? Because they hear from the wrong source. And that's why Srila Prabhupada was so emphatic about hearing from the proper source. Because you can find other sources that will say the exact same thing that your Gurudev does. Even to the conclusion that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God and we should surrender. But there's a stage in the relationship between guru and disciple when you become eligible for the most confidential knowledge. That's when you've passed all the prerequisite tests and you've proven how submissive and surrendered you and faithful you are. And that is when the conclusion is imparted that beyond all this surrender and service and devotion is the most confidential knowledge. But beyond all that is the final glory when you kill God and become God. But you see, when you've been given little doses of poison for so long, your bhakti lakta bija has been killed. Doesn't necessarily happen all in one big grand event. It happens subtly, imperceptibly. Not by the mechanics of the words, but by the motive in the heart of those who are speaking those words. If one has that conclusion, even though he may keep it to himself, you're infected by submissive oral reception. Even though the words, the actual words, are word for word the same as Gurudev speaks, if the motive, if the conclusion in the heart of the speaker is different, rather than nurturing the bhakti lakta bija, it will poison it. That's why Srila Prabhupada is so and adamant about who we hear from. Anything else?
Ashwana Swami, she was saying, you know, hearing from different which to read and everything. And we have the Srimad Bhagavatam. And, you know, Chaitanya Charitamrita, with all the chapters and everything. There's also the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that's the one volume. There's also the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that's one volume, which has all the different chapters. 9, 10, 11, things like that. Is it? Yeah. And what I was talking got it today. And, you know, plus we've been hearing for, and he also, he's probably a disciple, been hearing for the past 4 years or whatever, you know, 30 years. And, but they're still saying, don't read, don't go beyond that ninth chapter in 2 months. And so we're still wondering, you know, how much do you go at, you know, don't do that.
Don't go beyond ninth canto?
That's what they were saying. And definitely.
Why?
And
because Srila Prabhupada didn't translate them?
What is it?
Why? Because Srila Prabhupada didn't translate?
Yes.
And if Srila Prabhupada could not inspire and empower somebody to serve on his behalf, is that glorifying him? Is that kind of talk glorifying Srila Prabhupada? Mm. What it means is he was a failure. Parampara ended. Because he did empower individuals to serve on his behalf.
Yeah.
And then again, it's not so much the translation.
Right.
Anybody, you know, who knows Sanskrit can translate, it's the purports. And anybody who's really understanding Srila Prabhupada can see that Yudhamana Maharaj is writing purports according to his mood. So it's not glorifying Srila Prabhupada to say that we shouldn't go beyond where he stopped translating.
And definitely not the tenth. I mean, it's really been carried away with what to put so loud. But Prabhupada, you know what I mean? And it's all there, the whole volume of the Srila Prabhupada. So we have to stop there. You know, it's really
well, the one volume Bhagavatam only came up to the 10th because that's all that was translated at the time. So there's a reason for that. But to say that you can't go beyond that now that the 11th and 12th are translated is unusual. I think our time is up. It's not by our illustrious. Thank you very much. Thank you.